Speaking of medical stories, I saw that Jeff, were you part of like the Clubhouse crew before like Spaces got started?
Long ago, yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, I thought you were, because like, have you seen how like Dr. Jack Cruz has been circulating hardcore on Twitter? Oh, I guess it's on Twitter, so you wouldn't know. I don't know why I'm asking that.
Okay, hang on. Sorry, I was getting feedback here. So about Dr. Jack Cruz, what about him?
He's been like, he got a lot of heat back in the Clubhouse days because he was primarily just like, you know, doomer like I am. But like, he's been, I saw that he did a podcast with like, I think it was Benny Jones or something like that, where he was talking about like, I didn't know Jack was deep into like the whole JFK assassination type stuff and like polio vaccines and all these other things. I just thought it was kind of endearing to see like another Clubhouse personality is getting a lot of attention.
Right. Yeah, I think I missed all of that. So I remember Jack. I talked to him back in the day, but I missed all that excitement.
How's Noster treating you?
It's good. So I tried to go like hardcore Noster maybe 9 to 12 months ago, and it was just not a good experience. The UI UX was tough, and I couldn't, you know, and I just couldn't get traction on it, and felt like I was just posting to nobody. And it was hard. So it was hard to use, but I came back, and probably within the last 3 months or so, I think the clients have improved drastically, and it's a way better experience now.
Nice.
And so yeah. So I've used Damus a bit, and then I actually kind of switched over to using Primal, both on my desktop, and I use Mac stuff. So, but on my iPhone and desktop, very good experience. From a posting standpoint, it's very good. Like I'd give it like up to a B+ rating. I missed the macro stuff. Like my X feed was highly curated to all of my favorite macro thinkers and Bitcoin thinkers and philosophers. So I miss a lot of those people, and I feel like I'm kind of out of the loop on news. Like Twitter, you get news like firsthand. Like this is it. Like I don't know what's happening in the world right now, but you know what? I'm actually okay with it. It's kind of fun being ignorant. Ignorant is bliss. So that's a little bit of a downside. But on the other hand, my mood has improved noticeably. Like I was getting to be in a bad mood, especially with the politics, you know, like political season coming up, election season. It just puts me in a bad mood. Like I want to go out and like fight people when I get done spending time on Twitter these days.
Understandable.
So that's been nice to not have that. And then what was I going to say? Oh, and I miss Spaces, like the ease of use of just Twitter, and you can see everybody who's talking. And if you want to jump in on a conversation, that was really nice. And they're working on those kind of apps right now on Noster, but they're just nowhere close. You know, and all the people keep hounding me on my DMs like, oh, it's a lot better. You got to try it now. And every time I try it, I'm like, nah, this is still way too hard to use. And you still can't tell who's on there or what they're talking about or, you know, and it's clunky and you got to – anyways. So the UI UX has a long ways to go. I'm not a builder in any way. I don't code. I'm not a software developer. I don't know how to do anything that these people do who are having fun building. So I'm just sort of the guy who complains. I'm like, man, it would sure be nice if we could do this, or sure be nice if we could have this. And I think
you're a feedback guy.
I'm a feedback guy. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a complainer. I'm a feedback guy.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So
well, anyway, I was going to say you're in good company. I'm kind of speaking for Shane, but like I for one don't know how to do any of that. So I feel you on that one. It's like, I feel bad because I don't know how to do it, but like I'm a feedback guy as well. So like this could use some improvement. Like it needs to be a little bit smoother for the customer experience and all that.
Right. And it's again, to my point, like I wouldn't have nuked my X account. I had like 100,000 followers, you know, like I wouldn't have nuked it if it weren't for the fact that it's coming a long ways and it's good interaction now. And it's really fun, I think. And again, like I'm not a builder, but it's fun to be a part of building, sort of like early Bitcoin days. Like, you know, I know this is going to take off and this is the future. So you kind of have to put up with the nonsense for a little while until it gets to be smoother. And it's just kind of fun to be a part of these early days, I think. So anyways, no regrets.
Not one letter, huh? That's one of my favorite ones. That's my credo. Oh man. No, I think some of you guys know what I'm talking about. Excuse me. Sorry, I was out last week. Still recovering a little bit from this little bit of a cold that I had, but we'll get through it tonight. But yeah, I mean, if you guys don't know Dr. Jeff Ross, you guys are in for a treat tonight. And I think it's going to be fun because if you have been out of the loop a little bit with some of the news, maybe, you know, I don't want to, you know, down your spirits or anything, but, you know, World War III kicked off today and we may be able to talk about that a little bit. And then there's a whole bunch that we can talk about that's not related to the election and politics. And
yeah,
you know, you're a big family guy too, man. And I really enjoy seeing other guys out there that will, you know, talk about their family life and really kind of like, hey, this is where it's at, guys. Like get to this. And I think that is, you know, just a trophy in itself. And so, yeah, I think we had a ton to talk about. I think it's everybody in the crowd looks like they're ready to go. I mean, we got so many people out here. Welcome everybody.
It's great.
Should we go ahead and kick this pig?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, hold on your butts, Bitcoin veterans. All right, all right. Bitcoin veterans, we're Bitcoiners, we're veterans. This is real simple, guys. You do simple math here, you know what we're all about. We're actually here to put you back on the mission. That is the mission of Bitcoin veterans. And what do we mean by that? We mean making sure that you have a future and your wealth is stored in a way that they cannot take. And then helping us to build this parallel economy that's out there and everything that means. It's really, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, coming to Bitcoin for the upside of it and then sticking around for the revolution, which is huge and it's happening right now. We have the one and only, the great, I'd say ex-late Dr. Jeff Roth tonight, which I am super excited about. We'll do proper introductions here, but we're going to cover our sponsors, pay some bills, right back.
Black Sheep Ammunition. Veteran-owned and operated, Black Sheep Ammunition graciously donated 6,000 rounds to Bitcoin veterans for the Nashville Range Day event. Use Bitcoin 10 for 10% off. Black Sheep Ammunition is not made for the faint of heart. They craft ammo for the black sheep, for the watchful defenders called to hunt, provide, and protect, and for the brave patriots who boldly keep watch atop the hill, and for the weirdos who aren't afraid to stray from the flock. When courage calls you to action, Black Sheep will be there to answer. Their mission is to supply every freedom-loving American with enough firepower to get the job done twice. Check them out at blacksheepammo.com. Use the code Bitcoin10 for 10% off. A big shout out to our friends over at Punchplate. Coddle.co, that's CODL.co. Punch plates are a durable medium for your Bitcoin and can store 12 words or 24 word Bitcoin backups. Storing your Bitcoin in metal ensures your keys will survive in the elements, accidental spills, and in some cases even fire. You don't have to worry about smeared ink or ripped paper and can sleep soundly knowing your Bitcoin are inscribed on a punch plate. These are the best prices you're going to find in this industry. $24 for a 24 word punch plate. It's simple. It's a punch and a plate. No little letters, no stamps with letters on them. Just a punch and a plate. Go check them out at coddle.co. That's punch plate at coddle.co.
All right, man. I'm excited. We got Dr. Jeff Ross in the house tonight. He's a legend on Twitter, and so much of a legend that he said, "Peace out. I'm going over to Nostra." you have been so prolific in this space, and I think everybody, you know, just one of those guys that everybody loves, and is very appreciative to have you in this community and in everything that you've done. But we got lucky enough to snag you tonight. I think maybe Alex reached out to you. Mm-hmm. And when he did and said, "Hey, Dr. Jeff Ross is coming on," and I said, "Yeah, this is going to be great." So welcome to the show. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Shane, Mike. I'm super excited to be here with you guys. I love talking to you. We go way back. I mean, Mike and I were talking about, we used to go back to the clubhouse days, which were, I don't know, four years ago, before Twitter Spaces.
Yeah.
So first, I got a couple of comments right off the bat. That intro to this show is awesome. It's the best intro. Who did that? Which one of you guys? Shane?
I did.
You've got skills, man.
Like, sure. Yeah.
Like I get goosebumps watching it. It's so cool.
Oh, yeah. Oh, thank you. Cool. if you guys need anything out there in this this Bitcoin space, you know, if you're looking for a way to amp up your signal, or, you know, any type of branding or any of that kind of stuff, I am happy to take a look at that for you.
Awesome.
Yeah.
They're good to know. Second, what Black Rifle Coffee Company. I've almost invested in them just because I like their, you know, what they stand for. How's their coffee? I've never been to one.
So, you know, what's funny is they've got a whole bunch of different stuff out there. One of my favorites, I really like a light roast. You just got more caffeine in it. When I was drinking a ton of coffee anyway, that one's called their Sniper Hide. And it's great coffee. I mean, you know, I like coffee black, you know, really like the taste of it. So nope. without sugarcoating it and all that fun stuff, it's a great coffee. If you just like to drink black coffee, it's made by guys that have probably either drank more coffee or taken the packs out of the MREs and put them in as dip to keep themselves awake. So like, these guys understand what good coffee is.
Awesome.
No. I gotta say that as a avid coffee lover, like if I could make up a whole pot of like 12 to 20 cups worth, and if you don't stop me, I could drink it all day. Like, yeah. Black Rifle is, I would have to put it at the very top. I'd probably put it at the, like, my peak favorite as far as coffees go. Like, the last time I had it, I need to go out and buy some more. Last time I had it, like, that stuff, like, it was great flavor, but then primarily, like what Shane mentioned, like, I love the caffeine, and that stuff hits like a truck.
Nice.
So, like, if you're an enjoyer of caffeine and you like the stimulation, like, it's well worth paying for.
All right, I gotta try it out. You've convinced me.
But obviously, you know, it goes. They give portions of it to their own charities and things like that, which help veterans and all. You know, we're so fucked up. We need all the help we can get. So.
Right. Right on.
Mike, did you want to start anywhere in particular tonight?
I don't know if we want to, like, I'm one of the guys that love talking with Jeff about, like, all the macro stuff. I don't know if we want to jump straight into macro, especially because, like, when we're talking about, like, price action and the stuff and things that are going on with the markets, like, there's a lot of talk about how the stock market is. The funny thing is that, like, when you're talking about, like, price action and markets, is that, like, there's the adage of the stock market isn't reflective of the health of the economy, right? But I've been seeing a lot of, like, personalities kind of talking out of both sides of their mouth lately, of, like, saying it's like, oh, we're going through a recession right now, and the S&P's at all-time highs and all this other stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but the S&P is dominated by the Big Seven and is really being driven by NVIDIA right now, which, from what I saw, the majority of their revenue is coming from five players, and one of those five players is, like, Microsoft. So I'm just like, where's the health of the economy coming from? I don't know, we could jump into that macro stuff if you want, Shane, but
that's a great question for Jeff, you know, in terms of, you know, why are we at all time highs right now, and what's driving it?
Sure. So, great question. So, first of all, what you said, Mike, is true, that the stock market and the underlying economy are two different things. So a lot of people think, like, how could stocks be doing well if the economy sucks right now? And if I can't find a job, how could stocks be hitting all-time highs? Two totally different things, right? So the first and most important thing is to know, and I think most people have sort of figured this out by now, is that the central banks, and especially the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Central Bank, took control of the markets during the global financial crisis. So it used to be more of a free market economy. We have a centrally planned economy now. We do not have free markets in the United States. The only free market left in the world is Bitcoin. And I truly believe that. But even Bitcoin rides the waves of liquidity. So I talk a lot about liquidity, right? I talk a lot about this thing called global M2. And we can talk about sort of what all this means. It's the waves of liquidity that matter. And that's sort of a weird concept for a lot of people and pretty esoteric. So I like to kind of make it sort of simple and understandable. Here's what it is. So the government lives off of credit, right? The government borrows money that they don't, and they borrow more money than they have, than they take in tax receipts. And they do that all the time, year after year after year after year for decades. And so people talk about runaway debt. They talk about the debt spiral turning into the death spiral. And that's where basically they can't pay their debt in real dollars anymore. So they just print more money. And when I say they print money, what they're doing is creating more treasuries to pay off their debt. And so everybody blames the central banks, and they love to blame Powell and the Fed. But the real problem is government spending. This is totally out of control. They have no debt ceiling. Can you imagine? Like, imagine if I got kids, right? My kids are like low 20s, upper teens age. What if I gave them each a credit card and just said, you have no limit. Go do whatever you want. Spend whatever you want. And when you max out your credit cards, I'll just get you another one. And you can just spend that and spend whatever you want. Like nobody thinks that's reasonable anywhere in the world, but the government can do that. It's insane. And so that's
what we do. And on top of it, Jeff, it's like your kids coming back and now asking for you to prove what finances you have on top of it, which is
insane. Once you understand the plumbing, you're just like, what kind of world what kind of clown world do we live in right now? Right. It's insane. And so most people understand this, but I like to make this like super clear, because Powell is the scapegoat, and I'm not a fan of central banks, right? I don't think central banks should exist, and Bitcoin will negate the need for central banks someday. But that's not today. So today we got to live in the world we're in. Governments spend all this money. They borrow as much as they want. And primarily it's the US government doing this. They create credit faster than underlying economic growth can keep up with. And when that happens, you get inflation. Basically, what you're doing is you're debasing the currency faster than the underlying growth can keep up with. So things explode in price, houses, stocks, gold, whatever. That's institutional level kind of stuff, asset level stuff. On the other side, you have price inflation. Price inflation happens when the people are flooded with money, but the goods and services, the production of them, don't keep up. So they're all fighting for more goods and services. So the cost of goods and services go up. So a perfect example of that was back in COVID, right? The COVID debacle, which was just more crazy clown world stuff going on right there. They shut down all the businesses. They forced small business owners, millions of small business owners, shut down their businesses. They forced people to stay home, even though the young, healthy people were basically not affected by this virus. We don't have to get into that. But then what do they do? To make it better, they flood bank accounts with cash. But they also stop the supply chains around the world as well. So goods especially were not flowing into stores. So we had a shortage. Remember the toilet paper rush? Everybody's going to buy all the toilet paper. Everybody had all this cash, less goods. And I said back in 2020, like, this sucks. This is going to cause massive price inflation. We think it's good. All these people are cheering on one side of the political aisle. I got free money. I'm like, you're screwed, because what's going to happen 1 year from now is the prices of everything are going to get so expensive that you won't be able to afford anything. And then you're going to be yelling at people. You're going to be yelling at capitalism for causing these prices to go up. You're going to be yelling at greedy corporations for what's happening. And it's the money. It's the problem with too much money chasing after too few goods. So anyways, that's that. I'm going way off tangent, Mike. Okay, so coming back to the economy today, what's going on? The best stock market returns in the U.S. do the best, actually, when you have a weak economy, but not negative GDP growth, but sort of weak GDP growth like we have right now. We're sort of in the 2-3% range, which is kind of mid for the U.S., and it's kind of standard for the last couple of decades. Because what happens then is the central bank steps in and says, you know what, there's not enough underlying growth coming in. We got to come in and we got to boost the liquidity into the system a little bit. And what happens then is risk assets sense that and they front run that. And then this wave of stuff comes in. So there's two things that drive asset prices. U.S. based assets are driven or strongly correlated with U.S. net liquidity. U.S. net liquidity is the Fed's balance sheet, overnight reverse repo market, which is basically, I call it like cash in the back pocket of the Fed. And then the Treasury General Account. And that's so the Janet Yellen, the U.S. Treasury, they keep a checking account. And right now, I can't remember, it's like $800 billion or something. That's tax receipts and other junk that they got in there. If a whole amount of money is coming to the government, that's called liquidity contraction. When it's going out to the people away from the government, that's expansion of U.S. net liquidity. When it's going out to, and when I say the people, U.S. net liquidity goes to corporations and big banks, institutional level things, that drives asset prices significantly, and it really drives U.S.-based assets. So small cap stocks, micro cap stocks, mid cap stocks, those kind of things are strongly correlated to what U.S. net liquidity is doing. If you go back and look at a chart of like IJR, which is U.S. small cap stocks, you can do any ETF that you want to. What you'll notice is it peaked almost at exactly the same time that U.S. net liquidity peaked, way back in 2021. And that's been chopping sideways. I call it a crab market, chopping sideways. Small cap stocks and micro cap stocks and mid cap stocks have been chopping sideways for about 3 years now. If you take it, okay, so that's U.S. based. Global M2 is basically all of the cash, physical cash, checking accounts, savings accounts, retail money market funds, and like certificates of deposit, which only Grandpa and Grandma uses anymore. Liquid, like very liquid cash. You can get that tomorrow if you need it, right? Like if you got to build a pay or something, like pretty liquid cash. As that increases, that drives global assets, Bitcoin, gold. And actually, interestingly, U.S. mega cap tech stocks have become global stores of value. Central banks around the world buy Apple, Amazon, Tesla, even, you know, the Google, whatever, these kind of stocks. Nvidia now is one of them. Those. So what you'll notice on that, and actually what's cool, I've always said this, but Lynn Alden, who's like 1,000 times better of a person than I am, she actually just did the work with Sam Callahan. I don't know if you guys saw that. They put out a report that basically showed this. There's like a greater than 80% correlation over a rolling 12-month periods that as the flow of global M2 moves, so goes Bitcoin, and it's higher than any other asset class. I wish they would have done NASDAQ stocks instead of the S&P 500 because NASDAQ has more of these big mega cap tech stocks. And then teased out small cap stocks because small cap stocks move differently. They move based on U.S. net liquidity like we talked about earlier. So that was a really long answer to say, after several years of chopping sideways, global M2 is actually starting to move higher now, primarily because of what China's doing, but also because the economy is revving up again. And as the economy revs up again, banks start lending more again. And then one final thing is because Powell just lowered the federal funds rate from 5.5% to 5%. That immediately impacts Americans who have variable rate loans. HELOC loans, small business loans, credit card debt is all based on something called the prime rate. It's usually the prime rate plus something. And so when the federal funds lowers from 5.5% to 5%, immediately, like that day or the next day, the prime rate moved from 8.5% to 8%. And so every person with this shorter term variable debt suddenly had lower cash payments, which is good because now they have more cash in the bank. They're making, instead of, you know, if they had to pay $2,000 a month, now it's $1,800 a month or something like that. So now that moves global M2 higher. So lots of interactive factors there, but that means people have more cash that drives global assets. That's really good for Bitcoin over the long run. That's why I'm bullish now.
Yeah, I was going to say, we got a Bitcoin Ollie here that says Dr. Bear, and he's got a little smiley emoji to bull crab to bull. So you've officially moved on to this is we're about to hit it, huh?
I'm all in. I'm Dr. Bull right now. So this is when it happened. So I told people I've been speaking, first of all, about a year ago on Twitter X, which I nuked. I said October 2024, October 2025, October 2026. Someone write these down. That's all I said. I like to be cryptic every once in a while. I actually just reposted this today on Nostr, which is why I'm thinking about it. Because going back and looking at past Bitcoin cycles, liquidity cycles, what's going on, how the four-year liquidity flows happen and how they coincide with the presidential election, all that stuff, I think that the bull market officially starts October 2024. I think that it will probably peak October 2025. And I think it will probably fall again and following liquidity flows again, we'll have another big bear market that will bottom around October 20. Just my guesses, obviously, but that's kind of the time frame I'm working with. And I think I'll be mostly right.
Do you give any credence to the fact that, you know, maybe the last hard asset that got an ETF being gold back in 2004 went on an 8-year bull run after that? Do you see anything like that happening with Bitcoin in this, you know, what some people are calling a super cycle?
No.
Okay.
So
we're gonna need longer answers. Your answers are
We done yet? Oh yeah. Because everything changed in 2008. The global financial crisis changed everything. And so now we live on liquidity cycles. And I actually posed this question. And to be honest, I stole this from the Raoul Paul and a guy named, and I know it's a bad word to talk about Raoul, but he's a great macro thinker. I hate his crypto nonsense, but he's great at macro. And another dude who I can't remember. But they put into words what I've been thinking about for a couple of years. Can you have a credit crisis like we've had in the past? And the huge credit crisis, the last big one was in 2008. We all know the housing things and banks were going, you know, up, belly up. It was awful and it was crazy. And it felt like the world was ending for anybody who was paying attention. If every time that starts to happen, the central banks come in and flood the money with trillions of dollars, can you actually have a major credit event anymore? And that's their thesis. Instead, we get a debasement phenomenon. And so they flood the market with dollars and new credit and new treasury and all, and we get fiscal stimulus and we get monetary stimulus from the Fed, fiscal from the government. And what happens is you don't get these horrible credit events anymore, but instead you get massive debasement of the population and of the dollar, and you got to pick which worse. And I think almost everybody who's in politics would say it's way better to have debasement of a currency than to have a massive credit event where the whole Keynesian credit-based system locks up and shuts down and everything collapses. So they're preventing the everything collapse by having this huge debasement event. So I think, so any data I look at before 2008, I think it doesn't really matter that much because the world changed in 2008 and I think it's forever different now. So that's that. The ETF thing, I just think Bitcoin spot ETFs were always inevitable, right? Anyway, we always knew this was going to happen if we've been paying attention. Wall Street was going to, they want to get on board. They want to get their greedy paws into this and start collecting fees off of it. It's just part of it. And so what the true Bitcoiners have to do is protect the heart and soul of Bitcoin from Wall Street, from being centrally captured, and remember what it really is, right? It's this peer-to-peer, decentralized, secure, permissionless system. And if you have a Bitcoin spot ETF, you have a Bitcoin IOU, and it's no longer permissionless, and it's no longer secure and decentralized anymore. It's you're counting on BlackRock or Fidelity or whoever or Coinbase, heaven forbid, to hold your Bitcoin, which is not your Bitcoin. And so we have to keep building out this second and third layer system in these Bitcoin circular economies, which will get bigger and bigger and bigger until they all coalesce together around the world. And that's how we maintain the heart of Bitcoin. So the ETFs are just inevitable, and they are what is going to take us through the next bull phase and what's going to help Bitcoin continue to grow steady up and to the right. But it's not going to do, I don't think it'll do a sustained run because the credit, because of these cycles of liquidity are too powerful. And I think that what's going to happen is exactly like what happened last time, somewhere in 2025, probably second or third quarter, we're going to have, everybody's going to ape into it. People are going to FOMO in. People are going to sell at 150K Bitcoin and they're going to think they're brilliant. And then they're going to be like, oh crap, now it's 250,000 and I sold at 150. And then they're going to come in at 275 and they're going to lever up 5X. And then those are all the people that are going to drive it up to, my target is 475K. So who knows, it may be 200, it may be a million, it could be anywhere in there. But the people are going to ape in at exactly the wrong time, like they always do with leverage, right? And then they're all going to get wrecked and they're going to hate Bitcoin because it ruined their lives. And I'm like, you got to not be so stupid.
Yeah, maybe study a little bit, build a little conviction before you go all in like that.
Yes. But they will, because they're going to see their neighbors that went up 10X because they were patient, you know, and that's just how people are. Everybody's stupid. It's the fear and greed cycle. Fear and greed will always be with us for sure. So I think we're going to have another huge bull run and then we're going to have another bear market crash and everybody's going to be whining and crying. And I'm going to be telling people, by the way, that liquidity tides have turned. It's time to be conservative. You might want to hedge your position and everyone's going to hate me and they're going to throw stuff at me and they're going to block me and which they do every bear market. And I'm going to say, I don't care because I don't have anything to sell. And I'm just here to try to help you. And I don't want you to get wrecked. And everybody's going to get wrecked anyways. And they're still going to hate me. And that's just how life is.
Tyler Durden says, I'm targeting 58K.
58K forever. Forever. Let's go.
Oh, I forgot who it was. Somebody said, in 100 years from now, somebody's going to say you were lucky that you bought at 58K when Bitcoin's 58K.
Probably. Hey, I gotta say, go ahead.
Dude, if you wanted to add something, go for
no,
it.
So no, I'm good.
What a lot of what you just like really kind of towards the tail end of that around the like the Bitcoin conversation sounded like you're kind of at a position that I've been holding for the last couple of years. I even wrote about it, was that there's going to be a long period where Bitcoin and the dollar are going to exist together. And honestly, I don't see any reason why Bitcoin and any fiat currency aren't going to live together for a while, because it seems like they're going to be like acting as a balancing mechanism. Right. Mm-hmm. So where like the average citizen like uses Bitcoin as effectively a savings account or savings asset to protect themselves from the debasement versus having to be exposed to risk, in my opinion, riskier assets like the S&P or whatever, because like the three of us girls here on the conversation know that investing in equities has so many more risks than investing in something like Bitcoin, because you're not beholden to the failures of a CEO or a president or a board of directors, or name any number of like human errors that could be made that could negatively impact like the valuation of a company's equity. But so I just had one quick question here, and the answer by no means does it have to be quick like the question, but do you see a potential future of where like the Federal Reserve is putting Bitcoin on their balance sheet in order to support their operations? Or because you said something that I didn't really like consider, is that central banks have a balance sheet that they're putting assets onto. I honestly was pretty ignorant to that. Like, so do you see that kind of move being made? And then I guess not as short of an answer as I sold it at, or sort of a question as I sold it as, but do you see the Federal Reserve putting Bitcoin on their balance sheet to support their operations? And then do you also see, because Donald Trump brought this up at the conference in Nashville, do you see the potential for the U.S. trying to basically revert back to a gold standard type currency, where they are trying to back whatever the next U.S. dollar is probably going to be a CBDC like we all fear. Do you think that they're going to try and back that with Bitcoin for any amount of time?
Okay, so let me keep me on track here, because I like to go off on rabbit trails, as you know.
You and me both, brother.
Yep. In the next 10 years, I think a lot of national currencies are going to fail. Small countries, they're going to hyperinflate. By fail, I mean they hyperinflate and then they go to zero value. And then what happens is the population has to put their purchasing power somewhere. And so over time it's going to coalesce. And I think right now, there's like 170 currencies in the world, fiat government, something like that. I think that's going to shrink. And what's going to happen is that purchasing power is going to go into the US dollar, or possibly this BRICS coalition somehow, whatever they do, or just into maybe the Chinese, even though China has tons of problems, but something who is not American friendly, basically. And then into Bitcoin, the dark horse, right? Coming up the rear, but moving fast. So a couple points. People who talk about the US dollar hyperinflating and going away soon are either super not smart, or they're just wrong, or they're kind of crazy and they're saying it for clickbait or something. The dollar is not going to hyperinflate. There's no possible way structurally that the dollar will hyperinflate unless we have a major world war or something, and we just have to do like massive, 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 you know, borrowing way beyond our capacity. That could possibly cause it. But even before that happened, all of these other currencies are going to hyperinflate first and die first. So I think the dollar is going to be with us for a long time. So to your point, Mike, I think we are going to have government fiat currencies still for a long time. We're not going to hyper Bitcoinization, you know, in the next 5 years. Matthew, I feel you. I love you. We're not going to hyper Bitcoinization, you know, right away, and everything, and everybody's going to go onto a Bitcoin standard. So that's coming, I think, about 20 years from now, maybe. But I don't think the central bank, the Fed, will necessarily have Bitcoin, but I do think the U.S. Treasury will, and you know, the government will sort of have a supply of Bitcoin somehow, sort of like they had, or whether or not it's real, the Fort Knox gold, some and oil reserve concept, like they will have a stash of Bitcoin somehow. What will happen is, I think we're, and this is a super fun time to be alive because it's really interesting, where Gresham's law is happening in real time. People do not want fiat currency, and more people are waking up to the fact that fiat is just these random currency units or pieces of paper, as Jeff Booth likes to say, to emphasize the point. They're literally just nothing. They're nothing value units that the government says has this value, but over time, it's just this race to zero. So what I think is going to happen over the next, and this will be probably by 2035, we're going to start seeing this in action, is that countries who are doing business with each other, maybe it's the business of war, maybe it's commerce, I hope it's peaceful commerce, whatever it is, they're going to say, you know what? I don't want your treasuries anymore. I want Bitcoin. I want you to pay me in Bitcoin for the value of what you owe me. And that's, and the nation states are basically going to force each other. Like, we all know this is just a clown world gig. Like, we all know you're just printing this stuff out of nowhere and it has zero value. And just like it did back during the Vietnam War, right? And the other nation states that had their gold hanging out with the US, they're like, I want my gold back. I don't think your dollar is worth what it's worth. I think you're printing too much money to pay for this stupid war. Give us our gold, right? Give me my gold.
And so, shout out to France on that one.
Go France. Yep. Send your destroyer or whatever, your battleship or whatever they say. I think the exact same thing will happen. And I think it's inevitable that within the next 10 years or so, countries start demanding Bitcoin as payment. I don't think we go back on a gold standard. We've tried that. You don't do the same gig twice. I just don't think that's going to happen. Gold has tons of limitations. It has a lot of great properties. I always like to give props to gold, right? I was a gold guy before I was a Bitcoin guy. It did a stellar job of being a stable store of value for thousands of years in the analog age. But now we live in the digital age. And so Bitcoin couldn't be created until the digital age with cryptography, with the blockchain, with all this kind of stuff that Bitcoin needed. Basically, as we moved into the digital age, it's the perfect money. And we couldn't have perfect money until the digital age is what I believe. So anyways, shout out to gold, but we're not going back on a gold standard. Too many limitations. Bitcoin is everything that gold is and much, much more. And it's anything that's good for gold is 10 to 100x good for Bitcoin. And I think that will continue for the rest of our lives. So I don't know if that answered your question, but I think that all nation states, if you want to not only just thrive, but just survive in the next 10 to 30, 40 years, they will have to have a stash of Bitcoin. And I love watching these countries like Bhutan and El Salvador who are starting to stack already. I literally believe, and I've said this for 5 years now, Bitcoin will change the geopolitical world order. And if you're late to the party, you're going to be last in line in the new world order. And I say, man, if you want a good seat, you got to start stacking now. And if I were the king for a day or the president for a day, first thing I would do is put us on a Bitcoin standard, and I would overhaul everything and simplify everything. And that would, and if I wanted to be relevant for the next century, I would start a Bitcoin standard and a Bitcoin, you know, reservoir today.
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's get to one of the audience questions here. Thomas, the little here, Dr. Jeff, can you expand more on your 475 target and how you came up with that prediction?
So I'm like, I clearly have ADD, right? And I'm, and I could be,
no.
Yeah, right. And it's an ADD superpower. So every once in a while I get on these like little tangents and these rabbit holes and I have to follow it down to the end. So I spent like a week pouring over charts, looking at things, literally just sitting in front of my computer, staring at charts.
Somebody screenshot that and turn that into a meme.
Literally. And looking at past Bitcoin cycles on dailies, weeklies, monthlies, annual charts, looking at liquidity cycles, global M2, thinking about the presidential cycle, thinking about fiscal and monetary stimulus and how all of this interacts and you know, the roughly 4-year Bitcoin cycle, the halving cycle, all this kind of stuff. And when I went through all of that and looked at all different things, right, I look at all these different models, Plan B's model, which I think is going to be proven false this cycle and it will be completely irrelevant by next cycle, I believe. Power law theory, which I think is credible and probably the best model we have today. I'm not saying it predicts the future, but I think it's the best model we have today. And it's been true so far to date. The question is, will it continue to be true? That's what everybody is debating. And I can't predict the future. So anyways, looking at all of this stuff, I thought, you know what? I think that the price will probably hit somewhere between 450 and 500. And people don't like I think it could go anywhere between 200 and over a million. So 200K to a million plus this cycle. And by this cycle, I mean by Q4 of 2025. So about, you know, 4 quarters from now, maybe 4 to 5. People hate that. I get people like, you can't have anybody can pick a range that big. That's like, we could drive a truck through that range. I'm like, I know, but this is the range of possibilities. And I work in the world of probabilities as a fund manager, right? Like you have to think in terms of probabilities. So that's my huge range. When I narrow it down, I think 450 to 500. Yeah, it go 58K. My range is zero to infinity, but it'll probably be 58K. That was a joke. So I do think 450 to 500, I think, is probably, if I had to pick the most probable price. And so I just picked 475 in the middle of that. There's nothing magical about 475 other than nobody else said 475. So I did, and I've just stuck to it. I know I'm going to be wrong. What I do as a fund manager, what I care about is vector, direction and magnitude, right? Did I get that right? Or force and magnitude or something like that?
Direction and magnitude. That's right.
Yeah. So I want to be directionally correct, and I want to be in the ballpark magnitude wise. And I think I will be. I think it's probably going to be around that time, even though I'm just clearly guessing.
Wade said somewhere between left and full torpedo.
Yeah. See, Wade, you get it. You get what I'm talking about. Somewhere in between there. That's how I picked it. It's nothing. And it's just a guess. And I tell people this all. Like, I'm going to be wrong for sure. And people are going to, literally, people will hate me and throw things at me and call me names and threaten me and be like, how dare you? I bet my life savings on 475 exactly. And you're wrong. And I'm like, I know I'm wrong. I'm just
guessing. That's on you, homie. If you're listening to somebody on social media and like you're making your financial decisions based on that, it's like,
exactly. People have something else going wrong with their lives when they're mad at Dr. Jeff. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people out there though. But it is
there are.
A lot of people don't like me. So it just is what it is. I can't get everybody to like me.
Those people
you wouldn't want it anyway, because there are a lot of people out there that I don't want liking me.
Yeah. Hey, I don't want you to like me.
That's right.
You can leave.
Stop that. Right now.
So do you since we talked about like the stock market and the nature of the economy, like what do you think is going on right now? Like, cause right we kind of danced around it a little bit, right? Like we talked about like how stock market's doing, how like we expect Bitcoin to be going. Like, do you have any opinions on like what's going on right now? Do you think that like maybe we could be in like some sort of economic like job market recession or something like that, and the stock market's not reflecting it? Like, do you have any opinions on that?
So I think most people are confused by two things. I think they're confused by how crazy the COVID response was and how that just distorted everything in the markets. And the markets have been trying to recover since then. I think of an example, like I play guitar, right? So like if you're plucking a string, you're plucking your E string, dong, 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 and then all of a sudden you go, bam, and you snap it and it goes like this for a little bit and then it goes back to normal again. This thing is what happened. Here we are. This thing is what happened with the COVID stuff and all the stimulus, and they shut down the supply chains, and then they gave everybody all this cash, and you know, goods went through the moon, and services crashed. But then some services went up because they were like, you know, internet based things like Peloton and Zoom and all that kind of stuff. And then all of this stuff has just taken time to get back to normal again, to get back to our normal sine waves that all of the economic cycle goes on. And so that's the first thing that's confused people. And then they're just normal. They're trying to get back to normal now after all of that stuff. The second thing that's important, this is basically since 1971, it's been a problem where we've had two economies. They've been diverging, right? The K-shaped economy we talk about. And back during COVID, people were actually talking about it, which was kind of go as the K-shaped recovery, right? The people on the bottom half of the income in the US were really struggling. The people in the upper half were kind of killing it. They were doing well. Like things were actually doing well. The Fed came in and blasted the economy with all this QE, all this fiscal response happened, and assets just took off again. So we had that big downer in March of 2020, and then everything just went straight up into the right after that. So this K-shaped thing is super important. And what I see people confusing all the time on CNBC and Bloomberg and Wall Street Journal and all this kind of stuff, Financial Times, they never talk about what they're talking about. But what happens is the people who are convinced we're in a recession, right? They're talking about these people. They're minimum wage jobs. They can't afford anything because the cost of everything has gone up so much over the last 4 years. They're working two or three jobs. They still can't afford anything. They're the renter class. They're renting and their rent has gone up. They're paying, they had to give up their car because they can't afford car rental payments. So they're walking places or they're taking the bus. They life sucks for them. They can't find a job. You know, it's very, very difficult for them. Credit card. So people will talk about stats like credit card debt is at all time highs. Like people aren't paying. Delinquency rates are at all time highs. Delinquency rates on car payments are at all time highs. They're talking about this group of Americans, the lower half of income people who are just getting crushed right now. The crazy part is they don't drive the economy though. They don't move stocks and anything else because they're the renter class, right? And I'm not saying that derogatory. I'm saying this is just how it is. A lot of young people and millennials, like Gen Z.
How dare you?
The millennial class and Gen Z are in this group too, right? They're fresh out of college or not, or no school or whatever. All they can find is a crappy job at Chick-fil-A flipping chicken and handing out waffle fries, and they can't afford their apartment, so they're living with their parents and they're Snapchatting, and that's what they do for fun. And there's nothing else to do for them because they can't afford a house, and it's really hard to start a family, and they're embarrassed to get married because they can't support their spouse and kids and all that. Okay, so that's them. They are absolutely in a recession and they're getting hammered. And also US manufacturing has been in a recession for like a year and a half, just getting crushed. It's been terrible. And that's the same class of people. They're struggling. They want to just work. They don't have higher education degrees. They're not a doctor. They probably got out of high school and they got a job at a factory, but then, you know, screw, some president gave their job to China and now they don't have work to do and they can't make an honest living anymore. Just working and doing what they're good people that just can't afford life right now. Life sucks for them. It has sucked for them. It's going to continue to suck for them because this is a problem with the money. This is all comes down to the money. This comes down to, we have a money that rewards the owner class and penalizes the renter class. And it's getting worse and worse. This income inequality goes until basically the system breaks. And this group of people at some point is going to start a coup that's going to turn into a war. And they're going to be like, either we're going to start a war or we're going to all starve to death and die. I'd rather start a war than starve to death and watch my family starve to death and die. And I'm serious about this. Like, I hate this, and it's happening right now, and it's only getting worse and worse and worse. And so the other side of the, and then I'm sorry, I'm tingling right now because I get so mad talking about this. The other side of the economy is the upper half of the K-shape. We're the owner class, okay? They're people like me. I'm a doctor. I'm doing fine. You know, when the economy goes into recession, I still have a job. These are my monitors. I read radiology studies all day. And it's a recession proof business, right? So I don't lose my job during a recession and I still get paid the same amount. I own stocks. I own Bitcoin. I have a house with equity. All of that stuff, as the monetary supply expands and the money gets debased, all of the value of those things goes up, at least in nominal terms. Bitcoin goes up even in real terms. Obviously, we all know that substantially. The only thing that goes up in real terms besides Bitcoin, interestingly, is these tech stocks. So these, and I call it not just tech stocks, but internet monopoly companies, which are the kings of the digital age, which you all know is Apple, Amazon, Alphabet, companies like that. They are the monopolists of the internet age. They literally have a monopoly on where the digital age is going for the most part. And so if you own those, you can actually outperform monetary debasement. If you don't own those, if you own even US small cap stocks, which used to be awesome before the global financial crisis, you used to buy value stocks, which used to be awesome, but then everything changed because we don't have a free market anymore. Pick any other asset, housing, gold, whatever, it doesn't keep up with monetary debasement. You're actually getting poorer every year. So that's a super long answer to say, whenever you hear people talking about, are we in a recession? The people who say yes, they're talking about these people. Credit card debt, the life sucks. They're working two jobs. They can't afford anything. They're the renter class. Life, they are in a recession. the people up here, the owner class, they are not in a recession. They're killing it. Their stocks are killing it. They're, like you said, they're at all-time highs. They own gold. Gold's at an all-time high. They own Bitcoin, all-time, you know, close to all-time highs. Two different people. And at some point, this population is going to say, screw this. I'm going to go fight for a better world. And that's when it's going to be just crazy. I want to help fight this. And this is what Bitcoin can bring this together. We're trying, people, like us Bitcoiners are trying to make a monetary revolution to bring this back together, because it's proof of work. Because all you have to do is work, and then you save in Bitcoin, and then you don't have this anymore, because your Bitcoin doesn't steal from you. Your Bitcoin grows in purchasing power over time. It's not like the dollar that steals your purchasing power over time. It's not like these crappy central governments that don't do anything for you but make your life terrible. It's a different world, and that's what we're trying to fight for. So, like, keep fighting for this. Sorry, I'm getting worked up tonight.
It's good to hear somebody, you know, somebody else out there going, hey, we've got to unwind the spring a little bit, man. Like, what's coming from, you know, Gen Z and some of the millennials out there that are feeling as desperate as they are? I think you're 100% right. And I think Mike and I are on the same page on this. Like, we definitely agree there. You know, it's not all sunshines and rainbows for, you know, Bitcoin, right? It's like, it's not just going to displace the dollar. It's not just going to fix everything overnight. There's a lot that's going to have to happen between now and then. And a lot of it's growing pains on changing systems to begin with. And that civil unrest that's coming, hopefully we can mitigate it as much as possible in some localities where it's definitely going to happen faster than others. But there's so much that, you know, we don't talk about. It's great to talk about numbers, and it's great to talk about economics and what's going on out there. A lot of people are extremely interested in that. But there's also this, you know, real side of Bitcoin, like the personal side of Bitcoin, the family side. And you've obviously got kids who are, I don't know, what, Gen Alpha, Gen Z?
Gen Z,
right? Yeah. And so, you know, I'd like to kind of just get your firsthand perspective. If you guys haven't seen, you know, Dr. Jeff is a huge family man. Every chance I see this guy, he's getting out, being with his family, spending time with them, you know, and to me, I think that's got to be the goal, that in terms of where we're going and what we need as a society, you have to have strong families. This is the built-in insurance. And I think, you know, if you will study and save in Bitcoin, it's going to help you foster that insurance, that family life, that's going to help push us towards a better culture to begin with. So I'd just like to, you know, understand, you know, how you approached this in the beginning, how it changed your life, when it changed your life, and you saw kind of like the results of it. Damn, man, this is really something amazing, and what it's meant to your family.
Okay, that's a good one too. So you got to keep me focused here. So how did I get involved initially? So I'm a fund manager right around a hedge fund. I'm always looking for assets with the best returns, the best return profile, and ideally the best risk adjusted returns. And in academia, risk equals volatility. And I always say risk only equals volatility in academia. That's a stupid thing to think about, but that's how the world works. So Bitcoin caught my eye way back in 2015, 2016, because even then, and especially then, it had incredible risk-adjusted returns, meaning volatility-adjusted returns. So it does this, right? But it goes up more than it goes down. And so the Sharpe ratio, which is basically risk-adjusted returns or volatility-adjusted returns, were just off the charts. That's what got me into it initially. And I'm like, I got to look into this. This looks pretty incredible. I learned about it, and then I did the classic clown world crypto garbage nonsense, the shiny object, right? Like, and I hate this. I see people do this all the time. I always try to like shield people from this, because I'm like, please don't do this. Please don't do this. I love crypto. And then, you know, or like Trump, like I'm doing the Trump coin. I'm like, oh, crap, you know, it's just like it. People cannot get away from that shiny object thing. So anyways, that's what I did. So I was buying Bitcoin in 2015 and 2016 when it was like $300, $400. I was a doctor making bank back then because I was a specialist guy. I mean, I could just buy tons of Bitcoin, you know. And then what did I do? Back then on exchanges, I don't know if you guys were around back then. Back then, everything was paired with Bitcoin. So if you wanted to buy ETH or Bitcoin Cash or BSV or Litecoin, or I had a diversified portfolio of crypto.
Like, hey, this, there we go. There's the bingo right there.
Yeah, this big. And all of this was what used to just be Bitcoin, and then it turned into 50 pieces of crap. And so what happened is 2017 came along, and I mean, I was a genius, right? I always like to make this clear. This was not, had nothing to do with my business, nothing to do with Veilshare. This was me personally. Right? I was a total degen crypto trader. Confession. And I was like, I don't know what's going to win. You know, I hear people talking about Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash. I heard the fork wars and the two pitches. Yeah, you think I'm going now. I can get going if I have some beer in me. But anyways, I don't drink that much beer, but when I do, it gets me going. I didn't know it was going to be the winner. And so I'm just blanking. The Bitcoin Cash and the what's the term I'm thinking of? The wars. Not the
fork. Oh yeah.
The block
size. Block size wars. Thank you. Block size wars. So I was like, I was only peripherally involved, and this is before Bitcoin Twitter, and it was before Clubhouse, and I just didn't know. You know, I was trying to research and like, I don't know what's gonna, maybe a bigger block size sounds like a pretty good idea, maybe. And so again, because I was stupid, and that's a rule in investing, stupid people, and not to offend anybody, but stupid people have diversified portfolios because they don't know what they're investing in. So they're like, well, I guess I'll just own 50 things because I don't know which one is good. So that's how I was with crypto. I was brilliant in 2017, and then made all these incredible gains. And then 2018 happened, and literally everything went down 95% to 99%. And I was left with this huge tax bill in April of 2018, and I had zero Bitcoin because I sold all my Bitcoin to buy all of this garbage. And I was like, dang, what just happened? That was weird. And so
was a few more expletives involved in that than just
yes.
Dang.
I don't curse much, but yes, there may have been at that point. So that was my like school of stupid, you know, my humble pie. And then 2019 came around, and I think that's when Safe's book came around, Bitcoin Standard, maybe 2019. Does that ring a bell? Somewhere around there.
All right.
And then that's when I finally got it, right? And I think a lot of people, that was maybe the book that helped them finally get it. Like that helped me get it. I was like, oh, that's what Bitcoin, and that's why it's different. And so then I went down the rabbit hole, and then I actually put my 100 and then 1,000 and then 10,000 hours into studying Bitcoin. And so now I counsel people, don't be stupid like I was. Don't be a degen crypto trader. I used to say things like, oh, I'm going to trade this crypto. I don't believe in it either, but I'm going to make all bank in this, and then I'm going to sell it, and then I'll buy a bunch of Bitcoin. I'll have even more Bitcoin. I hear traders saying that all the time, and all of them are going to get wrecked because that's just how life works. And then they're going to learn, and then they're just going to start stacking sats after that. So I already lost track of the original question. This is what I do. Did I answer?
No, not even close. But
it was how I got into Bitcoin. And then what was the second part of the question?
Just more or less like, you know, basically the family side of it is, you know, what has this done, you know, in terms of, you know, the breathing room and everything else?
So the degen crypto trader life is like the lowest form of manhood, right? I mean, it's right up there, like with like gaming and living in your parents' basement, kind of like you're not going to get married if that's your life. You're not going to have kids and be responsible. If you do, you're probably going to get divorced, and you're probably going to like leave your family because you wrecked everybody, you know? And so I just encourage people like the incentive structure of Bitcoin gets you thinking long-term, and it gets you thinking about how can I build a better world for my kids and my grandkids and my great grandkids? It's how can I build projects that last? It's how can I get away from this garbage that comes on the internet made of plastic that breaks in one day that I'm giving to my kids to play with. And then they cry because it broke. And so I'm like, that's okay. I'll buy another piece of crap for you. And you can play with this. Like that's the short-term high time preference life that the fiat world breaks. We can talk about healthcare stuff too, right? Because it's super unhealthy to be stressed out all the time. Stress causes literal physical conditions. It's called psychosomatic. You guys know about this, you know, at least as well as I do, probably more. It's stress causes problems, right?
Well, and that's one thing I've said in the Bitcoin space. I'm like, if you're a quote unquote Bitcoiner, or you claim to be a Bitcoiner, and you're like doing all this stuff, but you're not also investing in your health, like you're A, not a Bitcoiner, and B, you're not actually investing because you're not investing in your own future.
And it's not a coincidence that those two things keep happening, right? I could probably name, if I thought about it, 50 people that I know who have figured out Bitcoin and then have figured out their health. And suddenly they're healthy. They're not obese anymore. They're eating better. They're actually exercising. They're thinking decades into the future now, instead of thinking about what donut they're going to eat a little later this morning. Right. I mean, it's just this different world that Bitcoin creates. And it's phenomenal. Like this incentive structure, the way it changes a person and it changes families and then businesses and then nation states is astonishing. And it's so fun to be a part of it. And I don't like to emulate it too much. Like, I know people who literally worship Bitcoin as a god, literally. And I think that's, please don't do that.
Problem. That's a problem.
Problem. Like, come on. It's a tool. It's awesome. You're right. But there's so many great things, but please. Okay. So family, Shane, is super important to me. It always has been. Part of it's because I'm a Christian. And so I'm geared that way anyways. But there's nothing more important in life than your relationships. So, right? So, like, and the only thing that is up there with that is your health. Like, and most people don't believe this, right? Because everybody's like, I would do anything to be rich. I would do anything to have 100 Bitcoin right now, and I could do anything. I'm like, no, you wouldn't. If I told you if you had to switch with somebody who's 90 years old and who is a multi-billionaire and for your 25-year-old self with no Bitcoin, would you do it? And nobody would do that, right? If you knew you were going to die in a couple of weeks because you're so old and unhealthy, nobody would do that. Like, you have to have your health and you have to think about your health. And having this long-term, low time preference mindset just helps you think of things. And it's happened to me. I turned 50 recently. That was a big kind of, and I'm not really a birthday guy. I celebrated by having a beer with some friends.
You and me both, man.
Yeah. And in their garage. That's how I celebrate my birthday and with my wife. And that was awesome. But it hit me. And my dad also died this year too. And we were pretty close, and he had a 6-year super stupid struggle with Alzheimer's. It's just the worst disease, and it just changed him. He was this totally different person. And it's an awful disease. But it got me thinking, like, hey, I'm next up. Like, my dad just died. I'm the next in line in the circle of life, you know, and I have my kids who are kind of in the 18 to 22 year old age now. And I'm like, I have just this life with them, and you're kind of starting to run out of time. And so you start to realize, like, man, time is super valuable. And again, what makes me so angry about the fiat system is it steals your time. It takes away your flexibility, right? It takes away the choices you can make. It forces you to work harder and harder and harder for less and less and less purchasing power. Life just gets harder. I have lots of friends that are my good friends that work really, really hard. They're poorer today than they were 15 years ago, even though they've been working their butts off for 15 years at some job, right? They have less money. They can do less vacation stuff. They can, you know, they're limited with what they can do. And it's not their fault. It's not because they're not hard workers and they're not smart. They're very smart. A lot of us went to the same school and got good degrees and are, you know, very intelligent people. It's just the fiat system, and it's stealing from you all the time. And so, again, it makes me so angry that we live in this system that is constantly stealing from us, and nobody knows it. Like, only 1% of the world understands how money actually works and understands that the government is sucking our purchasing power and our energy and our time and our future away from us so that the government can get bigger and bigger and bigger while our lives get more and more suckier. And there's a few of us that have figured out the system. Like, right, I run a hedge fund. I've figured out how to work the stupid system that we're in so I can make a good living. 90% of people can't do that. They don't understand what's happening. They just think, well, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm working like I should do, and I'm paying my taxes, and how come I can't buy groceries for my family? So anyways, another really long answer, but man, treasure people, treasure your health. Bitcoin enables this. It's not, you don't worship Bitcoin, but it can help you do all of this. And then since I'm on this tangent, I'm a hedge fund manager, right? Bitcoin should put me out of business. It should put the whole Wall Street financial industry out of business. And that is awesome. You don't need an investment advisor. You don't need a hedge fund manager. I mean, I try to outperform Bitcoin. That's my shtick these days. And it's, you know, it works sometimes. That doesn't matter. All you got to do is work, save in Bitcoin, and you will be able to support yourself and your wife and or your husband and your kids and leave something for future generations. And you don't have to know anything. You don't have to know how to invest. You don't have to understand what the Fed is doing. You don't have to pay attention to any of this nonsense. Like, all you got to do is save in Bitcoin. And literally, I believe, and I could be wrong, but I don't think I am, you'll outperform 99% of everybody else who's doing all this other nonsense. And anyways.
And one thing I'll add on top of that is, like, along with health, like, you have to have at least at a minimum multiple years for your timeline to actually realize any of, like, the benefits from it. Right. Cause, like, especially if you're one of those individuals that's part of, like, the bottom tier of the K-shaped recovery, like, then this is one of the things too, that I really try to talk about most with anybody. Like, I've been trying to orange pill my office since I started my new job. And it's like, the conversation's been going really well, but like the biggest thing is, like, anybody that's like looking to get their feet wet with Bitcoin is, like, to understand, it's like, you can put $5 into it. Like, if that's all that your excess income allows, $5, like, do it. Like, it doesn't seem like much, but if it's $5 a week or $5 a month, like, give it a couple years, and that'll will do something to the point of where, whether it makes it so you can purchase something that you needed, right? Or you can just understand, like, how impactful it is to your future and your future planning, like you're talking about, then you can understand, like, it's like, okay, this is worthwhile of putting more effort into to try and accumulate in order to improve not only my future standing, but my family's future standing. Because that's the other thing that, like, I think I ran it on the last discussion we had with Shane a couple weeks ago. Well, or no, it was on Spaces. It's one of our morning spaces where I mentioned, it's like, also at the same time, like what you mentioned, Jeff, is like, it's not a god, right? And it, like, you don't sacrifice the quality of your life for the sake of just trying to get as much Bitcoin as possible. Don't, like, I'm sorry, but don't sell all your chairs. Like, you kind of want chairs so your family can eat at the table, right? Like, and I know it's a meme, and I know it's a hyperbolic claim, but, like, there are also a lot of people that hear those things and they're like, oh, I need to sell absolutely everything and live on an air mattress in the middle of an empty apartment or a house and just do this for years. It's like, you're gonna jack up your cortisol, like you're talking about, and your quality of life is gonna go down. Like, balance is the key, right?
And to Jeff's point, I mean, there was so much there to unpack between health and age and time and, you know, that sweet period that you have with those kids, man. You know, it's sorry to hear about your dad. My dad's got NPH. He's been going through it since he was about 55. And for a lot of you guys don't understand, normal pressure hydrocephalus, it acts a lot like Alzheimer's. Short-term memory is affected, and it's a terrible thing. And it, you know, affects a lot of gross motor skills and everything else. But the time that you have where you're healthy enough and have actual time to go out and have real experiences, not, you know, not the cheap fiat experiences, but, like, no kidding, the real experiences. And that's one thing I will credit my dad with, you know, is he was never at a lack for giving us an experience where, you know, it was hard. There was a lot of suck involved with it. But, you know, that's where the real memories were made. It was where, like, he was teaching us to become men. And there was a bond that was formed during those times, which, you know, you can't buy. It's not just money. It's the fact that your dad or whoever this is that's in your life is going to take that time that says, hey, I want to be with you. I want to go experience this world with you. I want you to see some things, and I want you to, you know, maybe understand kind of like where I'm coming from as, you know, as a person that is in line before you, right? And you're going to pass this down to somebody else someday. That the ability to take some of the profits from, you know, I say profits, but let's just, you know, some of that money out of Bitcoin and not be sitting on the kitchen floor, not worried about, like, you know, I'm stacking this, you know, extra $5 or cents or whatever it is. You know, to free that up and then to go out and spend that with your family and take that time and show those guys who you are and really, you know, expect from them, you know, a lot of the same things for their legacy in the future. I think that is absolutely, you know, exactly what our culture needs. And, you know, kudos to you for being an example out there in the Bitcoin space doing that as a great dad, man.
Oh, thanks, Shane. I really appreciate you guys as well and your leadership in this area. Let's see, Mike, you said something that triggered talking about how even just little tiny bits of DCA of buying little chunks of Bitcoin, most people think that won't make a difference. But I'm telling people from, you know, I used to be an investment advisor, which, by the way, part of this whole thing about having a higher quality of life, my quality of life because of regulators in the investment advisory business, that was like 80% of my professional stress was because of these people. And I'm like, you know what? I'm 50. I don't have that many good years. I mean, I'm healthy, praise God. I got a wife who's super healthy. I got kids who are healthy. I'm very blessed. I want to spend time with them and do stuff and not just work my butt off. I'm super ambitious and I've been a workaholic for a very long time. There's good and bad to that, right? There are pros and cons to doing stuff like that. But like three careers for 11 years kind of sucks. And I'm like, okay, I'm going down to two careers, you know? And so that's what I'm doing now. I'm still doctoring and doing my hedge fund. But getting rid of that stressor has been awesome. And I'm already starting to see the fruits of that. So to your point, Jane, to your point, Mike, even a little bit can make a difference. And I tell people this and they think I'm kidding and I'm not, but like, if you live in Central America or South America or some crappy country where the government is doing terrible things to you and your money, or somewhere in Africa, you know, pick a country that's kind of destitute and they have corrupt governments and your money is hyperinflating away. I'm totally serious about it. Some people make $2 a day, right? There's a lot of a billion people, I think, or more live off of like $2 a day. Put one penny worth of Bitcoin a day into sats, buy a penny's worth of Satoshis. And that will literally start to improve your life after probably 4 or 5 years. And it's because it's all relative. I get asked all the time because of my profession, how much Bitcoin do I need to retire? How much Bitcoin do I need till I can whatever? Like, it's an impossible question to, there's no blanket answer. It depends on your lifestyle. It depends on how much you spend. It depends if you're married or not. It depends if you have kids or not. It depends if you want to leave a legacy or not. It depends if you like to go on million-dollar vacations or not, or fly in an airplane or not. So if you have a life where you're used to living off $2 a day, I am telling you, you can change your outlook for you and your spouse and your family and your future generations by putting one penny worth of that into Bitcoin a day or a week or whatever your schedule is, and just saving it, chipping away, living off the other $1.99 worth of whatever currency you're in, putting a penny worth into Bitcoin. You will change your life station in your future within probably 5 to 10 years, because it's an asset that you will get out of the renter class and get into the owner class. Bitcoin is literally the world's only digital bearer asset that you own and nobody else owns. They can't take it from you. It's permissionless. You can change it. So, you know, people are like, oh, it's too late. You're never too late. This is going to go on for as long as Bitcoin exists, which I think will probably be at least 1,000 years. Who knows? Maybe forever for all of humanity. It may go to beyond Earth. I think it probably will. It could go to Mars, and then it can go into other planets and go, you know, Star Trek, you know, other galaxies, all that kind of stuff. It's crazy to think about that, how different the world would be. But it always will benefit you, because it's not stealing from you. It's accruing your purchasing power over time. And that is so important to the quality of your life and the stress of your life, and your personal health and your family's health. So just start with whatever. If it's a dollar a day and you're an American, and you know, start right now, go buy a dollar's worth of Bitcoin and your life will start improving. So sorry.
All right. No, it's quite all right. We're going to pay some bills real quick. We'll be right back.
Paladine Tower Tactics offers professional grade firearms and tactics training to equip men and women to be protectors of life. The owner and lead instructor, Scott Wiley, is a combat veteran, a former airborne infantryman who fought in Afghanistan. After the Army, Scott started Paladine Tower Tactics in 2015 while serving his community in law enforcement. He has 10 years of experience in law enforcement as a SWAT officer and firearms instructor. Over the last decade, Scott has had the privilege of training hundreds of students from all experience levels in the military, law enforcement, and the civilian world. His passion is to equip his students for the gunfight, the legal fight, and the spiritual fight. All three will take place in and after a violent confrontation. Check out PaladineTowerTactics.com to learn more about the course offerings or to host a class on a range near you. Follow Paladine Tower Tactics on Noster, X, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Yes, he does accept Bitcoin. Scott is a patriot who loves God and loves liberty. His training is some of the highest quality available. Go check him out and support his veteran-owned business. Solo Satoshi is dedicated to the advancement of open-source Bitcoin mining, with a steadfast commitment to the security and decentralization of the Bitcoin network. As a pioneering force in the Bitcoin space, your mission is to empower individuals and businesses worldwide with innovative, secure, and decentralized mining solutions. At Solo Satoshi, they believe in the transformative power of open source software and the potential it holds for the future of Bitcoin mining. They strive to foster a community of developers and enthusiasts who share our vision of a more secure and decentralized Bitcoin landscape. Our dedication to open source principles is at the heart of their mission. driving their commitment to transparency, collaboration, and innovation. They are passionate about supporting the growth and the development of the Bitcoin network, and they recognize the critical role that open source software and developers play in achieving this goal. By promoting and contributing to open source ecosystems, they aim to facilitate a more robust and resilient Bitcoin network, ensuring its longevity and success for years to come. At Solo Satoshi, their mission is not only to provide cutting-edge mining solutions, but also to educate and inspire others about the importance of decentralization and open source principles in the Bitcoin space. They believe that by working together, we can create a future where Bitcoin mining is more accessible, efficient, and aligned with the core values of decentralization and open collaboration.
All right, everybody, you know what time it is now.
Hey.
What have we got here? A fucking comedian, private joker.
All right, this is everybody's favorite time. It's story time. We got Dr. Jeff Ferrazzi, who's given us a great show so far. No pressure, you know. This is that one area where nobody reads the brief, and most of the time they come in here unprepared. But Dr. Jeff Ferrazzi is actually one of the only, maybe one of two of our guests that's actually read the brief, and yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, clutch or kick here, Doc. Like, if it's not good, we're just booting you.
So I was asking my wife about this earlier before the show started. I'm like, they want me to tell a story. I'm like, what? Like, what story should I tell? And they said it could be, I think, meaningful or funny. And I'm like, I don't know, I'm not very good at meaningful stories, but maybe I have some funny stories. And I thought, well, especially for this crowd, I'm like, well, you guys are, you know, military dudes, so you're used to kind of gross things. And so I'm like, I have a lot of gross healthcare stories.
Let's hear it.
So I thought, well, maybe I'll go down that route. And the way my brain works too, is I don't think of, like, some people have just like this whole arsenal of stories or jokes, like right at the tip of their tongue or mind where they can just pull them out. And I'm not like that at all. I have my mind is blank almost all the time, unless something triggers it. Like if something triggers, I'm like, oh, that reminds me. And I'm a, that reminds me kind of guy. So
I'm exactly the same way, Doc.
Yeah? Okay, good. So I don't feel too bad. I'll tell a story that actually precedes med school. After college, I didn't apply to med school right away. I thought I want to go live a little bit before I start this crazy path. Cause once you start med school, for people who know, it just sucks your life. And speaking of sucking your life away in the fiat system, the med school life sucks your life. Like, so you already kicked your butt all throughout college and said no to every fun event and every party so you could get your good grades so you could get into med school. And then once med school starts, like, literally your life is just over. They own you for 4 years, and then your residency owns you for another, you know, for me, it was another 5 years. And then I did another year of fellowship. So it's like 10 more years where you just have no life. Anyway, so before that, I'm like, I gotta go do something interesting. So I'm like, okay. So I talked to a friend who did this deal. So I did what he did, and I went to live in Jerusalem, and I worked in a hospice. It was the St. Louis French Hospital, which, if I don't know if you guys have ever been to Jerusalem, it's cool, cool city. Highly recommend to everybody that you go there. I know there's a war right now, but if you can find a time where they're not currently at war, it's probably actually safe even during wartime, but, you know, not recommending it. If you can go to Jerusalem, it's unbelievable. And the history there is unbelievable. And you're almost embarrassed to be an American where everything here is like 50 years old or less, you know. It's old if it's 200 years here, right? I mean, they got stuff that's like 3,000 years old that you're checking out. It's just unbelievable, the history. And you don't have to be religious, right? I'm a Christian, so I thought that was really cool. But you can just be there from a historical perspective. It's astonishing. Anyways, so I worked at this hospice called the St. Louis French Hospital. And it was amazing because it's right across the street from the old city, from a gate called, they have a bunch of gates around the wall of the old city. And then I was right across the street from what's called the New Gate or the Christian Gate. And at this hospice, they would send patients from all over the world who wanted to basically, it's hospice, right? So they're end of life care. They wanted to die in Jerusalem at the holy city, is what a lot of people think of it as. And so it was amazing. So people from, you know, all over, like Russia, Europe, Middle East, some in Africa, North Africa kind of places, all coming to this place. And it was run by some a couple at the time when I was there back in the 90s, a couple of Jewish doctors, a lot of Catholic Christian nurses, and then the nursing assistants, which is what I was. I was a volunteer nursing nurse's aide, or whatever, you know, nursing assistant, whatever they call it now, because it was before I had any of my medical training. I was a volunteer. All of the other volunteers were from all over the world. I was at the time I was the only American there, although about 5 months into it, my best friend came over and did it with me so that we could hang out, and then we traveled around together. But it was all just amazing. The whole experience was incredible. And so the stories there are funny because, you know, I was a nursing assistant here in the US after that, where I did all this training and where, you know, you learn your sterile techniques and do all this stuff. But there it's just like you just do what you got to do, you know. And so, like, you didn't even wear gloves for hardly anything. Nasty stuff.
Yo.
Mucus.
What?
Urine, puke, pus, you name it. You know, if it comes out of a person, like, I was cleaning it up and dealing with it, you know. So one of the stories that I call digging for gold, which, by the way.
Oh, no.
I made the mistake of telling this story at a church function, like a Christmas party.
Yes.
Because I thought it was so funny. And I literally, like, half the people were laughing and half were like, who is this person? Get him out of here. Anyways, so. At this place, you know, in America, if you're constipated, right, you take, the doctor prescribes a pill, or you drink some fiber is what they do in the hospital, even though I don't actually agree with this stuff as much anymore, or give you an enema or do whatever you got to do to, you know, unclog the dam. There, what we had to do is you do a digital rectal. So this is the one thing we got to wear gloves for. We actually were blessed with wearing gloves.
Oh, thank God.
I had a patient who had a stroke, so they couldn't move, and they were obese. It was a 300-pound person. I had to roll him up on his side. Okay, I'm by myself. It's in, I believe this was in maybe September, somewhere in September, and it was hot out. And there's, of course, there's no air conditioning. This is like a million-year-old building, you know, and it's probably like 100 degrees in the room or 90 degrees, stuffy, hot. So I put gloves on. I roll the patient over. You've got to stop me if this is inappropriate for your show.
Oh, no.
No, you're not even touching inappropriate. Keep going.
Roll the patient over, and I put my finger up their anus into the rectum. And I'm like, okay, there's a lot of poop in there. Okay? This is actually what you got to do in the old stuff. So I'm holding this patient up who's very overweight. And my hand, because they're overweight, you can probably picture this, is buried in their butt cheeks, right? And there's this huge wall of hard poop. So I'm in there going like this, trying to peel out the poops, coming out a chunk at a time. By the way, I asked my wife actually recommended I tell this story, by the way.
So great.
So I'm pulling the little rocks out one at a time. And all of a sudden I break the dam, right?
Oh, I knew it.
And this wave, here, I got to get my arm up here to emphasize. This wave of gravy thickness diarrhea comes down my hand, down my arm, to my elbow, okay?
Oh, my God.
And it smelled so bad. Like I do well with gross things, but I don't do well with bad smells. And so I'm okay. So I'm like this, and I'm holding the patient up, and it's like 100 degrees. I'm sweating, just pouring sweat. I'm by myself, and this diarrhea is down to here, okay? And I'm going, and I'm gagging because it smells so bad. And then I keep pulling it. And I pull it out, and I literally get done with this, and it's this like vat of soup of rocks and stewy gravy diarrhea on the bed. Holy and it's God. Up to my arm, past my glove, and I still gotta like finish the job, right? I'm holding the patient up, and I can't set her down because it goes back into the stew. So I gotta go up, and I'm trying to clean up with my other hand, and then, you know, pull all the way. Anyways, that's kind of the gist of the story, other than it was like one of the worst experiences I've ever had from a smell perspective. I have a lot of stories. So that's my digging for gold. I dig and I unclogged the patient, and they were doing better. They thanked me afterwards.
Nice job, Doc.
It's a good thing you got gloves for that one.
Yeah, really helped. I needed a hazmat suit for that one.
Yeah.
But so anyways, even though I'm a doctor, I still gag at bad smells. I have to confess that. I can look at almost anything.
You're human, man.
Yeah, still human. So That's my digging.
That was a great story.
That was a great story. That's the grossest story we've had. And I got to tell you, if full visual, I've been in that, not that specific situation, but in that situation where you're just like, you can't leave it. You're the man of whatever that situation is, and you got to deal with it.
Yes.
Holy God.
It's gross.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I didn't get really the point of the story, but what I was getting out of that, Doc, was that your bench press was probably pretty impressive at the time. It's not just 300 pounds when you have to roll somebody and then hold them up and then clean up afterwards.
Yes. Nursing assistants, man, they have a deal. You got to thank the next time you see a person who says they're a nursing. There's a lot of people who do that for a career. It's a tough job taking care of people when they're and it also builds real compassion in you, right? People, I mean, life can suck really bad for people. And when you have like a bad stroke or you have to have somebody literally dig up your butt to unclog you, that's pretty embarrassing and humiliating, you know? And so nursing assistants a lot don't get much credit, but man, they do some crazy stuff and they actually get a lot of like work-related injuries, trying to lift people up and do stuff. And so they'll get kind of back injuries and all that kind of stuff. So anyways, my heart goes out to them. Shout out to nursing assistants, any nurses, any people who take care of patients out there. That's an awesome, awesome job.
Yeah. I was in that situation myself, the guy on the bed situation a few years ago with a back injury. And I had to go before I went home, man. And I had these young nurses that were taking care of me and everything else. And I was like, you guys need to go get me like an enema kit and all this other stuff. Right. And they're like, oh God. And I was like, I got to get out of here, guys.
I know.
So they brought it in. I was like, all right, you guys can leave now. And like, what are you talking about? I was like, I'm going to go do this for you. Don't worry about it. Right. Oh man. They kind of looked at me like you got to be fucking kidding me. Like you can't give yourself a fucking enema. I was like, this would not be the first time.
That's awesome.
Oh man, I've got so many stories about that kind of stuff, dehydrating after bad nights of drinking and everything else. Is like, oh yeah, you know what, I'm getting out of this fucking hospital. You guys take the night off, we're good.
I love stuff like that. I have like 1,000
that was a great story, Doug.
Gross stories like that, but anyways, not appropriate for some people.
Yeah, if they're in this crowd, it's great. It is. Oh man, it's already 8:20. I first of all, I want to say thank you so much for coming and hanging out with us. I mean, it's always good to see you, man. To spend some quality time with you and hear, you know, from you now that you're not on X anymore and see your daily bull crab that you've migrated into the bull market. I'm really happy about that. And you know, the fact that you've got such a good thing going with your family and setting a positive example out there in this Bitcoin community as well. I think it's to be admired and held up. And we just want to say thank you so much for spending time with us.
Well, man, I'm so thankful you guys invited me. I want to say I have mad respect for you guys and just for veterans in general. You know, I was thinking about this earlier. I posted something about war, you know, the military industrial complex and how much this frustrates me. And about how a lot of us are the same, are in similar situations where we live in this world where the systems are broken, right? The healthcare system is broken. And so everybody loves to sort of hate on doctors, and we're all owned by big pharma, and we love to keep people sick so we can make money. Like I hear that probably once a day or more. I hear military people who are just dudes who want to use their skills to help defend the poor and the needy and bring justice to the world, right? And defend and make it a more peaceful place. But they're part of this broken system, and they have these lives of like, what, like, you know, and I'm just being straight up. And I know you guys probably have way more intense conversations about this, but like, I know, you know, hundreds of vets that I've talked to in my life that are like, what was that for? Like, I went into the military for this reason, and then they had me doing this. And now I have these memories that I'm dealing with in my life. Like, what was that about? Like, what, you know? And I'm talking about like the broken system, and that like the education system is like that. Teachers who go into it because they want to help kids and teach them. And then they're like, what do I got to do? Like, what am I supposed to do and teach them what? And this is insane. And this like this whole world and how it all comes back to, we're living in, I think, the end stages of this broken system. And I do think you can bring it down. I think down to, you know, this broken money, and this, the incentives of the system and the people who are in power and the people who learn to manipulate the system and take advantage of it and of people, they're the winners in the system, which sucks. And that's just a terrible world to live in. And how this whole new world is starting to blossom and come out of almost nowhere, out of left field. And it's so fun to be a part of it. So all I want to say is I have mad respect for you guys. I really appreciate you guys as being defenders of what's true and of freedom and of justice. And I'm sorry that you're part of a broken system. And I'm sorry that I'm part of a broken system. But we're all fighting to do the best we can. And I love it that we're on the winning team finally. That's what I feel like. I have other thoughts as a Christian, but as a Bitcoiner, I feel like we're playing for the winning team, even though we're the minority and we're the David against Goliath right now. We're going to win this and we're going to make a better world, and it's going to be a better military, and it's going to be a better healthcare system, and it's going to be a better education system. And we're sort of the forefathers of this movement that get to help push it through. And we probably won't get that golden age, but I do think this golden age and this age of legends and this just, long-term thinking, beautiful world is on the other side of this. And so it's awesome to fight for. And I love, because military, you guys are born to fight for what's right. And so blessing to you guys. You guys are my heroes. And I'm thankful. And I'll come on your show anytime. I love it. So thanks for having me on.
There is no better way to end the show than that little, I don't even want to say rant or diatribe, because that was beautiful, man. I appreciate it. And we have all the respect for you as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and anytime you need a platform, man, we're here for it. Thanks again, Jeff, Mike, for hanging out with me again. Everybody else out there, thank you guys for all you're doing. If you want to get plugged in, you can go to BitcoinVeterans.org. We will plug you into the group. There are hundreds and hundreds, if not over thousands, of guys out there. You guys see, there's over 700 people, almost 800 people just watching the show right now. It's going to be replayed. If you guys will share it, we really appreciate it. This is a group that is all about proof of work. If you want to come in, you want to get involved, you want to do something, you want to head up a project, we've got something for you to do, and we have the manpower to get behind it and do something with it. So get in touch with it at BitcoinVeterans.org. If you guys can't get enough of Bitcoin Veterans, you can actually interact with us on a daily basis. We have a daily spaces on X and Twitter. If you're out there, come out. We do this every day at 10 a.m. Coleman, who is hosting that show, is doing a phenomenal job. Absolutely great. We've been at it for a little over, I think, a month now, and he's absolutely killing it. They've got great guests on there. Outside of that, I think we got Bitcoin Alaska coming up, thanks to Wade. We are in the active process of putting together, and I should say Wade is, but Bitcoin Veterans is putting together a trip for next year, a meetup up in Alaska. And I think it's going to be something really, really special where guys get to get out with each other, their families, and nature. Really beautiful place to get together and have something, pretty special that I don't think you're going to find all the time. So if you're interested in any of this stuff, again, BitcoinVeterans.org, you can hit us up. We'll get you into the chats and get you plugged in. Jeff, thank you again. Mike, thank you to everybody else out there that's doing all the heavy lifting. Thank you guys so much. We will see you here next week, same time, 7 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday. Until then, peace.